Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me. Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to encourage you, as you're making your holiday travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate, so you get all the benefits of going through Priceline, including being able to name your own price or choose from great published fares on hotels, rental cars, airline tickets, and even more. So when you're making your travel plans, remember the name JohnnyDollarAir.com, and part of your purchase price goes to support the show. Now it's time for us to continue on with parts 3 and 4 of A Matter of Reasonable Doubt.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Susan Grainley, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, yes. How are you, Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Wil... There's somebody there with you.
Yes, that's entirely correct.
Well, just listen, then. It's all fixed, Mr. Dollar. Grandmother's expecting you. She'll be alone for the next few hours, so come on out to the ranch.
You're certain of that statement, I suppose.
Yes, of course. Uncle Walter went into Vegas, and Aunt Hilda's gone somewhere,
yes,
too.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that.
You mean she's there? With you?
That's right.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, you men are all alike, aren't you?
That's quite a remark for a person your age, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, I'm quite mature for 16. Has she made her pitch yet?
I think we'd better postpone this discussion until the next time we meet.
Well, she always does, you know. She's a regular vampire. I figure Uncle Walter's going to kill her someday.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes, sir?
Goodbye.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Las Vegas, Nevada, to the home office, Amercon Northern Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment... The Matter of Reasonable Doubt. Expense account continued. Item 9, a half a buck. Tip to the hotel bell captain to call a taxi for Hilda Grimley and to wave goodbye to her as she drove away. I do not include the 6 brandies she guzzled. Those are on me. Of course, she had knocked on my door uninvited, so that made it her party. But still, it was my room, so that made her my guest, so... forget it. The whole thing left me too confused to itemize it. She'd obviously come on a fishing expedition. The fish, information. Bait, the usual, but nicely designed. Results, none on either side. What had started out as a trust case had turned into a snipe hunt. I was in over my head, floundering, and I needed some good, buoyant answers. I was hoping Mrs. Grainley herself could supply a few of them.
I'm very glad to meet you, Mr. Dollar. Sit down.
She wasn't young, and she wasn't beautiful anymore. But she had been once. She still had some of that assurance and authority that beauty always gives a woman. She seemed a little uncertain, a little harried maybe, but underneath it, just as tough as an old field boot.
I think you'd better leave us alone now, Susan.
Okay, Gran. If she starts using her brass knucks, give a whistle, Mr. Dollar. I'll rush in and save you.
Thanks, I'll remember.
Oh, she's a brash little flippity-gibbet.
And you love the dickens out of her, don't you?
Love? Yes, I do love the dickens out of her, Mr. Dollar. Is that what you came out here to find out?
No, I knew that already. Otherwise, you wouldn't have wanted to transfer all your holdings to her.
How did you know about that? Just who the devil are you, anyway? Seems to me Susan was pretty vague on that score.
She had to be. She doesn't know.
Then why did she think I ought to see you?
Oh, she decided I looked honest. Claims she's got a knack for that sort of thing.
As a matter of fact, she has.
And also, she loved her father and mother.
What do you mean by that?
Mrs. Greenlee, I'm here because your friend, Jonas Parks of the Flint Rock Bank, sent for me.
What?
I'm a special investigator for the Amicron Northern Trust Company of Hartford, Connecticut.
Why, Jonas didn't say anything to me.
He hasn't had a chance. He intended to when he was here this afternoon, but you were too ill to see him.
Ill? I didn't even know he was here.
Your nephew and his wife did. He talked to them.
Tell me, Mr. Dollar, just why did Jonas send for you?
Because he thought you might be losing your mind.
Oh, he did he? Huh.
Are you?
Well, if you thought so, you wouldn't have said it so bluntly.
Right. I don't think so.
Well, what made Jonas think it?
You asked him to set up an insurance trust for the benefit of your granddaughter, Susan. Apparently, the intent was to convey your entire estate to her over a period of 2 to 3 years.
What's so crazy about that?
Nothing at all, so far as that part of it was concerned. But it didn't stop there. After he got the proceedings started, you turned skittish on him, started to flutter.
Well, Jonas is a fool.
He is not a fool, and you know it. He's been your friend for 20 years. He's completely trustworthy, conscientious, and he has your best interests at heart.
How much is he paying you to say things like that?
Nobody is paying me but the Amicron Trust Company, and furthermore, you know it. All you're doing is trying to dodge the issue.
Young man, I'm not accustomed to being talked to this way.
Then you can look at it as a refreshingly novel experience.
You sound like Susan.
And an experience you don't entirely dislike.
Presumptuous whelp.
Maybe.
Are you married, Mr. Dollar?
No.
What a pity I'm not 30 years younger.
What a pity I'm not 30 years older.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And now let's stop scratching each other's backs and get to the point.
All right. Jonas is a fine man. No doubt he did have reason to get upset. These past months have been... Well, I suppose I haven't seemed like myself at all.
Why is that?
Oh, you're like a bulldog with a bone, Mr. Dollar.
Careful how you talk about your might-have-been lover. What has been wrong these past months?
Maybe I am losing my mind. Because actually, nothing has been wrong.
I don't agree. I think something is wrong right now.
Then why don't you tell me about it?
All right, I will. Apparently I'll have to if we ever expect to get anywhere. All right, some months ago you stopped going into town, stopped having visitors. Then you decided to get rid of your estate, turn it over to Susan. When your nephew Walter heard about it, he implied to Jonas Parks that you were losing your mind. Then you yourself started to back down on the idea. Why? Was Walter putting pressure on you?
Not exactly.
What were you scared of, Mrs. Greenlee? It's got something to do with Walter and Hilda, right?
Sit down. Almost a year ago, I discovered that the two of them were stealing me blind. Tampering with the ranch accounts, forging signatures, all sorts of ways.
Why didn't you take it to Jonas or to the police?
Because I didn't believe it at first. By the time I was absolutely sure, they'd cut the ground out from under me.
So you tried to convey the property to Susan secretly?
Yes, until Walter learned what I was doing.
Who's the push in that pair? Who's got the brains?
Why, she has. Walter doesn't even have the gumption to get in out of the rain on his own.
Uh-huh. Then she must have been the one who planned the auto accident. And he went along with it, of course.
What auto accident?
3 years ago, when your son and his wife were killed on the road to... Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Greenlee. I supposed you'd already guessed it.
Guessed what?
That it was probably murder. An old lady, tired and lost, seeing herself surrounded by enemies, living in fear. But she at least knew one thing, that she wasn't alone now, that somebody else believed her and was on her side.
Don't worry about her, Mr. Dollar. She'll be all right.
Well, she had quite a shock, Susan.
She had to know sometime.
Oh, it's not a matter of no, exactly. It's only suspicion.
All right, you go to your church and I'll go to mine. But I know Walter and Hilda murder my parents. And I think you know it, too.
Well, call it a real strong suspicion, then.
So what are you going to do about it?
What do you suggest I do about it?
Advise my elders? I'm only a helpless young female.
You're about as helpless as a mongoose with a cobra.
Flattery?
No, just a statement of fact. Say, look, what do you think they've been doing with the money they've cheated your grandmother out of?
Oh, that's easy. Uncle Walter gambles. And gambles and gambles.
And loses and loses?
Uh-huh. He's not real bright, you know.
Where does he do this? Different joints in Vegas?
Oh, just one, mostly. A club called the Lead Balloon, and the name figures.
Any special reason he hits that particular club?
I think it's the only one that'll take his IOUs. The owner came out here to collect a couple of times.
Happen to know his name?
Sure, I got big ears. His name is Deuce McCoy.
Deuce McCoy, the Lead Balloon.
And the rest of the dough? Hilda. She's what's known as a luxury dame, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, so I gathered.
I'll bet you gathered.
Oh, relax, will you? I'll send you out of the room.
Yes, sir.
Does she run around with other men?
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
All right, then. Do you happen to know any of them?
Nope. I've managed not to, but it hasn't been easy.
One or two, or does she play the field?
I wouldn't know, but she's always getting gifts from somebody. Oh, she's a real cool operator. But, of course, you know that, since you've been one of her victims.
How would you like to get spanked?
I don't know. I've never been. But I can quote you all kinds of psychology about it. Take, for instance...
Never mind. Good night.
Yeah?
Your name McCoy? Deuce McCoy?
That's right.
Johnny Dollar, I'd like to talk to you about a mutual acquaintance.
What mutual acquaintance?
Walter Greenlee. He's across the room there at the moment, bucking one of your crap tables.
Come on in, Dollar.
Thanks.
All right, now, what about Greenlee?
How much is he into you?
Nobody gets into me.
You've been taking his IOUs, haven't you?
He buys them off.
Holding any now?
Look, what's the pitch, huh? What racket are you in?
Insurance.
What's that got to do with Greenlee?
I don't think he's a very good risk.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
He's probably going to be doing time for embezzlement before long.
So why are you telling me about this?
Well, I thought you might be interested, since you've been taking his IOUs.
Oh, you're big-hearted, is that it? You're just being neighborly?
And... you might put it that way.
Yeah, and I might not. Now, what is your angle?
Is Greenlee a personal friend of yours?
No more than any other sucker out there at the tables.
Then you wouldn't know where he gets the money he loses.
Well, that I never ask.
And I don't suppose you'd know his wife.
Oh, he's married, is he? Hmm?
Her name is Hilda. She likes gifts. And brandy. And money. And excitement.
Then I hope she manages to find him. Whoever she is.
Oh, she does, one way or another.
We all got our problems, Dollar.
Yeah, but some of us more than the others, right, McCoy?
You through speaking your piece now, huh?
Not another word to say.
Well, and I don't want to rush you, but...
Yeah, hey, that's a nice cigarette case. Platinum, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
It's not yours?
Somebody left it at the table.
Somebody, huh? Then you don't know who it belongs to.
If I did, I'd give it back.
Then I'll save you some trouble, Mr. McCoy. I do know who it belongs to.
What makes you think so?
Because I saw it earlier today. It belongs to Hilda Greenlee. Johnny Dollar.
You're there.
Sure, I'm here. What?
I mean at your hotel.
Is this Susan?
That's right. Why aren't you out there, Mr. Dollar?
Out where?
On the old boulder cutoff. If I'm supposed to meet you there in 15 minutes, you're going to have
to... Wait a minute. What the devil is this all about? Where'd you get any idea I was supposed to meet you?
From your friend.
What?
Sure, he phoned here a few minutes ago. He said I should slip away from the ranch, take the station wagon, and meet you over on the old road right away. I just phoned your hotel on the off chance
Wait.
That...
I don't imagine he gave his name.
No, and I didn't recognize the voice.
Susan, listen. Get away from there right away. Don't go near that road. Come straight here to my hotel, do you understand?
Yes, but why? What's it all about?
Never mind. Just get here and get here fast while you're still alive. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Las Vegas, Nevada, to the home office, Amicon Northern Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, The Matter of Reasonable Doubt. It was only 9:30 p.m., less than 2 hours since I'd thrown my rock into the pool to stir up the fish. I'd expected results, sure, but not this fast, and not this deadly. I'd picked a gambling casino owner named Deuce McCoy as my broadcaster, and I'd let him know who I was, why I was here, and what I was going to do. Apparently, the news had gone out fast. But I couldn't figure this move. Even with young Susan out of the way, they still couldn't get their hands on her grandmother's estate. It didn't make sense. At least, not right then. One thing, though, that I was sure of. If Susan Gramley had driven out that deserted road alone, she'd have never come back. Not alive. Who is it?
It's me, Mr. Dollar.
All right. Just a second. Well, come on in, Susan.
Thanks. I guess it's really it's I, though. I mean to be correct.
I don't care whether it's I or me, just as long as it's you.
Say that again?
Oh, skip it. You have any trouble?
I missed the green light at Fremont and Fifth.
Anybody follow you from the ranch?
Nope.
Who was there when you left?
All of them. Uncle Walter and Hilda had just come in. Together. Can you beat it?
Well, then it wouldn't have been Walter who phoned you.
Oh, not him. He's got a kind of a sneaky undertone. I'd have recognized him right away.
And you didn't recognize the voice on the phone?
No. He didn't say much, just that he was a friend of yours, and you wanted me to meet you right away, so I said okay, and he hung up.
I see.
Well, maybe you do, but I don't. Oh, what did you mean when you said, get here while you're still alive?
I wish I knew. Look, Susan, that phone call wasn't just a practical joke.
Then you do know.
I know somebody was trying to get you out on that desert alone tonight, and they weren't trying it just for laughs.
You mean that?
I mean the luckiest thing you ever did was to pick up that phone and call this hotel.
But why, Mr. Dollar? Why would anybody want...
That's what I don't know. I don't see what they'd hope to gain by it. They know the trust hasn't been set up yet. Your grandmother's still in control of the property, not you.
Look, excuse my ignorance, but I don't think I know what you're talking about.
Well, maybe it's time you did, since you seem to be right in the middle of it now. Look, your grandmother decided to set up an insurance trust and convey all her holdings over to you.
To me? Gran was going to do that.
Jonas Parks at the Flint Rock Bank started proceedings, then got cold feet. He got the idea there was something screwy behind the whole thing. So he wired Hartford, and the trust company sent me out here to investigate.
But Gran never said a word. She didn't even mention it.
She was scared to death. Afraid Walter and Hilda would find out and block her off, have her declared incompetent, get control of the estate, and leave you clear out in the cold. She thinks a lot of you, Susan.
Gran's the most, isn't she?
How did she seem when you left? Back on her feet?
Oh, better than she's been in months. More relaxed. I guess she's counting on you, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, well, I wish I could be sure she couldn't.
Look, that phone call I got, if Uncle Walter and Hilda weren't behind it, then... Then who was?
Oh, I don't know. I'm pretty certain that by now they know who I am and why I'm here. And they know I'm out to get them. I dropped the word a couple of hours ago. I figured they'd react all right, but I didn't expect this move against you.
But there has to be somebody else in on it, Mr. Dollar. Neither of them made the phone call.
Yeah, I know.
But nobody else even knew about the trust.
Jonas Parks did, and Will Connors of the Weekly Tribune.
But they've been friends of Grant's for years and years. They wouldn't do anything to harm her.
I didn't say they would.
And they couldn't have had anything to do with the accident that killed my parents. Nobody could have, except Hilda and Uncle Walter.
Unless, of course, it was just an accident.
Oh, you know better than that, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, I'm beginning to wonder if I actually know very much about any of this. Susan, listen, how scared are you?
Oh, I'm not scared at all. I'm just... bewildered, I guess.
Good. Then you won't be afraid to stay here alone for a while.
Of course not. Sounds kind of grown up, in fact.
Yeah, well, all right then. Don't leave the room. Keep the door locked and don't let anybody in. If someone should try, call the manager and have him call the police. Don't answer the phone unless it rings twice. That'll be me. Got it?
Got it.
Good. Hey, there are a couple of magazines there on the nightstand.
Can I ask you what you're going to do, Mr. Dollar?
Sure, you can ask. See you later, Susan.
Stinker.
Young fella. I kind of hoping you'd drop around.
Wasn't sure I'd find you here, Mr. Connors, this time of night.
Oh,
The paper comes out tomorrow, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know.
I always stay around late the night before press day, just in case a big story breaks.
Sure.
Got to be here, you know, to break down the front page and remake the galley and all. Them's technical terms, of course.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you might have a story for me, but now, maybe that scoop we was talking about?
Nope, not yet.
Well, I can hold the press until 9:30 a.m. in the morning, but that's the last doggone final zero hour. And a minute later, come calamity, cataclysm, or high water, the Tribune has got to roll.
Yeah, sure. Well, maybe you'll have your scoop before 9:30, Mr. Connors.
You mean you're working on a clue?
Check.
Hot dog.
Yep, you said it.
You getting close to the denouement?
To the what?
Denouement. Yeah, that's a technical word. That's when the detective always pounces.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not about to pounce at the moment, Mr. Connor.
Yeah, well, keep your voice down, son.
Why? There's nobody else here.
You never know on this kind of a case.
Well, let's take a chance.
All right. I'm game if you are.
Good. I've got a couple of questions I'd like to ask you.
Shoot, son.
You know anything about a gambler named Deuce McCoy? Owns the Lead Balloon Casino over across town?
Well, I know who he is, all right. He don't own it, though. He just runs it for a syndicate.
Works on a salary, you mean?
Salary and percentage, I reckon. He ain't getting rich on it, though. Not the way he lets it get away from him.
On what?
Just two words, son. Women.
Hilda Grimley wouldn't be one of them, would she?
Well, it's a new one on me if she is. Of course, you live and learn.
You sure do.
Yeah, and be right cozy if something like that was going on. Her husband spends half his time in McCoy's place.
Yeah, I know.
You figure Deuce McCoy's tied in on this Grimley thing?
I don't know. You want to do me a favor, Mr. Connors?
Well, just sing it out, young fella, with a scoop.
Well, listen, young Susan Grimley is in my room over at the hotel.
You don't say so. Well, but
never mind, it's a long story. I hate to have her there alone. So how about going over and babysitting for a while?
Sure, I'd be glad to.
All right, I'll phone her first so she won't lay you out with an ashtray. And I'll keep in touch with you. If there's a story, you'll get it. Meanwhile, clam up.
Right.
I'll see you later.
Yeah, do you pack a gun, Mr. Dollar?
Sometimes. Why?
Deuce McCoy does, too. All the time.
The evening was just starting in the Lead Balloon, with two crab tables already in action, two more standing by, and a roulette wheel warming up. No one paid any attention when I walked back through the casino to the office. I waited what I considered a reasonable length of time, then tried the knob. The door was unlocked.
Gone, Buster. Beat it.
The girl was alone in the office, sprawled back on the sofa, drink in her hand. And it was pretty obvious it wasn't her first one, nor her second or third. She'd have been a real knockout, sober.
What's the matter? Don't you understand English? I said get out.
Where's McCoy?
What's it to you?
Feeling no pain, huh?
Oh, cut it, Buster.
Must have been a pretty big pain, though, earlier, if it's taken this much to kill it.
Go on and get out of here. What do you think you are to talk like that?
Johnny Dollar, who are you?
Get away from that desk. If Deuce finds you messing around in here, he'll kill you.
Even if I told him I was a close friend of yours?
You rat. I'll call one of the boys and get you thrown out of here.
Oh, I wouldn't. Might make an awful scandal. And I don't think Deuce would want that. Not right at present.
What are you talking about?
Oh, come now. You're in it too, aren't you?
You're not with the police. I know them all. You're FBI.
Oh, what makes you say that?
Look, if Deuce is in a jam, I don't know anything about it.
What's your name?
Nikki. Nikki Vernon.
All right, Nikki, sit down and relax.
Whoops!
Now, where's Deuce McCoy?
Think if I knew, I'd be sitting here by myself, lushing it up?
I suppose you were McCoy's girl before Hilda Grimley cut you out.
Cut me out? Nothing. That rotten little sneak's been asking for it, and I'm about ready to give it to her, too.
Is she here this evening?
You see any blood on the rug? Just let me catch that dirty little...
Shut up, Nikki, and sit down, will you? Now, what about Walter Grimley? Was he here?
Yeah, earlier. He was here in the office for about an hour. I don't know what they talked about. Deuce made me get out.
And Deuce left right afterwards?
Oh, half an hour or so. He had to wait to make a phone call first.
I see. Well, if you're smart, you'll forget him, Nikki. I've got a hunch he's not coming back.
It's her. He's gonna go off with that dirty...
Knock it. He's going off because he's in a jam. That's one thing you were right about. And by now, he must know the whole thing is falling apart. I think he'll try to run for it.
I'm gonna kill that dame.
Why? Why don't you throw away that bottle and forget about him? He's no good, Nicky. You know that, don't you?
Sure, I know it.
Then why are you beating your heart out over him?
You've never been a woman, have you, Mr. Dollar?
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, I tag the pitch too late, and a runner gets home. The score? 1-0. In favor of death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, I love the precocious teenage girl in the story. It's a nice little feature, kind of lightens the mood, even though there's some very serious things going on here. Just some great interactions between her and Johnny Dollar. I have to say, regarding the end, as I was listening to that, I thought, wow, that line's deep. And then I thought, what? You've never been a woman. Well, yeah, kind of obviously. But I know what she's saying. It just sounds weird as a closing line to the show, because when you close a show with that line, it kind of emphasizes it in a way that if it were at the end of a scene and you were going on to another scene, it wouldn't necessarily. Well, that said, let's go ahead and get on to listener comments and feedback. And we begin with Tim, who says, another story set in New England. The sheriff's accent is a modified Parker Finley. Ah, yup. Ah, yup, like Barry Craig's elevator operator. These California radio actors all sounded the same when playing a Southerner, a Yankee, a Texan, a Brooklynite. There was no subtle shading between Charlottesville, Virginia, Charleston, South Carolina, or Montgomery, Alabama. They played stock characters and used standardized voices for the most part. Radio was a mass medium going out to the whole country. Distinctive regional accents would be confusing. Well, in defense of the program here, both Barry Craig's elevator operator and this town and the sheriff are all come from Vermont. Well, I know there's some variation with some states, you know, bigger states like Ohio. How much much variation did you have in accent in 1950s Vermont? Anyway, back to Tim's note. Then Johnny meets Martin Peeny, the neighbor mending the wall. I recognized that voice immediately. Robert Frost, the poet, or a good imitation. His opening speech was a paraphrase of Frost mending the wall, the good fences make good neighbors poem. The resonant baritone followed the pitch, the cadence, and the pacing Frost used when reciting. It's not just my imagination, and he links to soundboard.com where there's a spot where you can hear Robert Frost reading a poem. So I assume that Les Crutchfield wrote a pastiche of Frost, and Johnstone tells actors to imitate Frost's voice. Was Frost's voice generally known? Not as common as Carl Sandburg's, who did a lot of radio work. I suppose I could do some internet research and find out for sure. He did go ahead and Google some Gates and found that the first phonograph recording for Caveman came out in 1956. This episode is from July 1956. It would have been just out, fresh in the minds of yours truly, Johnny Dollars, writers and producers. I can see Johnstone playing his brand new Frost LP over and over for the actor until he got the accent down perfectly. I think that's actually quite plausible, and it would make sense because they're doing this particular story in New England. And that's why I like the listeners we have, because that's not a connection I would have ever found. So thanks so much for that, Tim. Then we have another listener comment. This one from Mike, who says, I really enjoy your podcast, especially since you started doing the Bob Bailey serial Johnny Dollar episodes. I'll just have a couple of comments. I had trouble recognizing one of the episodes. I've heard them all already because you apparently misspelled the word quay as K for the Quay Bono matter. No big deal, but it was a bit confusing. Well, thanks so much. On that point, Mike, I will say that I've found various spellings of this. I think three or four different spellings for how this should be. And I think I just ended up going with the one that made the most sense, but I probably should revisit and re-edit those at some point. So, thanks for pointing that out, and I'll make sure we get the correct one there. He says, as for Shirley Mitchell, I was sad to hear of her passing and grateful that you brought my attention to it. I know her primarily from her appearance on Fibber McGee and Molly, where she played Alice Darling. I found it somewhat fitting that she died on November 11th, as Alice was a character introduced on the show as a wartime factory worker who boards with the McGees. She was a welcome voice on the show, and I'm sure her presence helped many GIs get through the war a little easier. As for the Johnny Dollar appearance, I didn't have the cast list to refer to, but I'm sure voice as the waitress. She quite possibly could be playing both the letter writing neighbor and is it Millie the waitress. I appreciate the info, and it's great to have the podcast of the Johnny Dollar episodes. Keep up the good work. That's possible, but as I look at the cast list, there's only two women listed, the other being Jeanette Nolan, and I think there were only two female parts in the whole story. So I think that it was probably the part of the waitress. So thanks so much for the email, Mike. And then we have a comment regarding the Tears of Night matter. William says, I must say, I wasn't very impressed with the resolution of this mystery. It simply strained believability that the jeweler would go through all these machinations, all the double-crossing and triple-crossing and murder, just to get back the necklace he sold to the widow so he could resell it and have enough cash to elude the police for a few years. He wasn't even the delusional kind of criminal who believed he would get away with it. He himself admitted that eventually he would be caught. I realized that he was an old man in a desperate financial situation, but it just seemed so preposterous to me. That's just my opinion. I can kind of see that. The thing is that really, this situation, if he had sat down and schemed this out, I would be with you. I'd be like, you know, he just kind of thought, hey, I sold a necklace to this lady. I could make the copy. In this case, the situation fell into his hands. And I think for someone who was used to living the high life, who was used to respectability and perhaps luxury, and the figures we hear, you know, 25,000, 50,000, really wouldn't get you far, but we have to remember inflation. So this was, you know, a good $200,000-$300,000 with which he could have one last fling before going to prison. And you know, if pleasure and luxury is the most important thing in life, and you don't have any kids or any legacy or see any value of your life apart from the material things you have, then I think his actions become a little bit more understandable. William goes on to write, but one thing that still bothers me is the fate of the jewels that Johnny mailed to himself. Did I misinterpret his last words, or did he imply that he took them for himself? I'll stand for the last 2 days of expenses myself. I didn't have any business sticking my nose in the jewelry end of it, but if you make me pay for them, don't ever try to hire me again. Pay for what? He couldn't be referring to the last 2 days of expenses because he just said they were on him. The only other them he could be referring to would be the jewels. The only explanation that I could think of that would be consistent with Johnny's character is the jewels were lost in the mail and that he was refusing to pay for the loss. If that's what he meant, then I have to say that was lost on me when I first heard the ending. The way that line was worded, it sounded to me like he was taking the jewels as a consolation prize, which definitely would go against Bob, against his character, at least Bob Bailey's version of the character, Charles Russell's version, I wouldn't be too sure about. Well, I think even Charles Russell's Johnny Dollar would think twice before saying, okay, I'll go ahead and eat the cost of these last 2 days on the expense account, but I'll go ahead and take this $50,000 necklace as a consolation prize. The way I interpreted the end of the story is it didn't have anything to do with the jewels. I think what he was saying, and, you know, we think about these emails that I receive, and even back in the 1950s and 60s, people would send and they would call people on things that were not accurate or correct in their portrayal of certain professions. And I could just imagine somebody who lived on an expense account, who dealt with expense account, sending letters into CBS to the Johnny Dollar producers and saying, you know, you can't get away with some of these things that he puts on the expense account. If he goes off to investigate a murder, has nothing to do with the investigation of why he's there, that's not going to be something the company would be liable for. So I see this in a way as an answer to that. The way that I read it is Johnny saying, I will, you know, if you want to dispute this and say it wasn't any of my business to get involved in the murder investigation, or the jewelry business, then you're right. And I'll go ahead and I'll pay those expenses. But if you go ahead and you make me do that, you're not hiring me again. It was an odd way of communicating for a guy because it was not straightforward. I wish they would have said it more straightforward. He couldn't be talking about the jewels because we have no information to indicate that the insurance company had insured them. And if the insurance company did have a policy on them, then his getting involved in the jewelry business would be perfectly legitimate. So I read it as him basically, in a somewhat sneaky way, giving an ultimatum to the insurance company and saying, you know, if you guys want to insist on the very strict letter of the law and the very strict rules for what you pay, and you're going to just be sticklers about this when I've been through all of this hassle because you people sent me out there and I was in the office of your agent, you know, you're right. You're technically right that You're not liable for the expenses, but we are not going to have a working relationship again. And, you know, with Johnny's reputation and the fact that so many insurance companies call on him, when dealing with cases that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, it just makes sense to go ahead and eat the extra padding on the expense account. Hope that answer wasn't too long. I'm already 13 minutes on this commentary, so better hurry up and wrap it up. One last comment from Todd, who just says, I want to say that I really enjoy listening to Johnny Dollar podcast. Did you ever hear the one where one of his friends makes up a matter to get Johnny to go fishing and relax? Todd, I have not listened to that. I'll be honest that with the detective shows that we do on the series, I listen to them as you as listeners get to them. Over the years, as we've added programs, I've had some series where I've listened to quite a few episodes in advance, just over time in my own private recreational listening. Because I've been doing the Johnny Dollar serial consistently, I think I've listened to one or two cases with each of the Johnny Dollars. So I think I've listened to a grand total of two of the 179 post-serial Johnny Dollars. And I've read a lot of synopsis, scanned through them in John C. Abbott's book, The Who Is Johnny Dollar Matter, and I'm definitely eager to get to them and enjoy them and discover them with the listeners. Thanks so much for the question, Todd. And that will do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Nick Carter. And then on Friday, join us back here as we wrap up The Matter of Reasonable Doubt and also conclude Belladonna Was Poison. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.